Asamyatam yasya mano vinashyat.
Dana vidischera param kinevi.
Dana Samaritam yasya mana prashantam Dana dhikim bharatasya kritam Asamyatam yasya mano vinashya Dana dhikim bharatasya kritam Samaritam yasya mana prashantam Dana yurikyam varatasya vityam Asamyatam yasya mana vinashya Dana yurikyam varatasya vityam Samaritam yasya mana prashantam Dana yurikyam varatasya vityam Asamyatam yasya mana vinashya Dana yurikyam param kivevi
Samaritam.
Perfectly fixed.
Yasya.
Whose?
Manaha.
Mine.
Prashantam.
Pacified.
Dana adhiri. By charity and the other processes.
In what?
Vada.
Please tell.
Tasya.
Of those processes.
Kityam.
Use.
Asamyatam.
Uncontrolled.
Yasya.
Whose?
Manaha.
Mine.
Vinashya.
Dissolving.
Dana adhiri. By these processes of charity and so on.
If aparam, further.
Kim.
What use?
Edihi.
Of these.
Translation by disciples of Wisdom and Grace, Basic Bhaktivinoda Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. If one's mind is perfectly fixed and pacified, then tell me, what need does one have to perform ritualistic charity and other pious rituals? And if one's mind remains uncontrolled, lost in ignorance, then of what use are these engagements for him? So I'm going to take this off. All the senses have been under the control of the mind since time immemorial, and the mind itself never comes under the sway of any other. He is stronger than the strongest, and his godlike power is fearsome. Therefore, anyone who can bring the mind under control becomes the master of all the senses.
Samyurjayam shakshumasasya vegam arudhudam dhanyadishtikyajeshe kurvantyasavirvam akramatyay vidhanyasthina vidhubhinura.
Failing to conquer this irrepressible enemy, the mind, whose urges are intolerable and who torments the heart, many people are completely bewildered and create useless quarrel with others. Thus they conclude that other people are either their friends, their enemies, or parties indifferent to them. Purport. Falsely identifying oneself as the material body and accepting bodily expansion such as children and grandchildren giving one's eternal property, one completely forgets that every living being is qualitatively one with God. There is no essential difference between one individual being and another, since all are eternal expansions of the Supreme Lord. The mind absorbed in false ego creates the material body, and by identification with the body, the conditioned soul is overwhelmed by false pride and ignorance as described here. Last verse, text 49. Persons who identify with this body, which is simply the product of the material world, are blinded in their intelligence, thinking in terms of I and mine. Because of their illusion of this is I, but that is someone else, they wander in endless darkness.
Devotion to the Supreme Controller, Ishvara.
who we know is Ishvara Parama Krishna. So Krishna is a goal. And that's what it's saying in the previous verse, which is text 45. The last line is Parohi Yogo Manasa Samadhi. It's saying that indeed concentration of the mind on the Supreme is the highest yoga. So it's just confirmed, again and again it's confirmed this point, that the goal of yoga, Prabhupada wrote two books. One is the perfection of yoga, and the other is Krishna consciousness, the topmost yoga system. So there's no doubt about it. And the very meaning of the word yoga is to connect. It means to link up. And so who are we connecting with? What are we connecting with? We're not just connecting with our bodies or physical exercises or with our breathing. What's the point of that? The point is to connect on a spiritual platform with God. And we can only connect with God or Krishna through devotion. Therefore, Samadhi Siddhir Ishvara Pranidhana. By devotion, the perfection of the whole thing is to connect with Krishna through devotion. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that that's the only way that we can know Him, is by devotion. Bhakti Mahabhujanati. Not through jnana, not through yoga, not through karma, not through any other process. Only by bhakti. So, all of these pious activities which were mentioned in the text 45, charity, prescribed duties, observance of major and minor regular principles, hearing from the scripture, pious words, purifying vows, all of these things are just preliminary procedures to help us gain the sukriti, to be able to make a choice to serve Krishna, or to enable us to win the favor of the devotee so that we can actually come in contact with God. Because it's none of these processes can bring us to bhakti. No amount of charity or austerity or Vedic study or sacrifices or anything can bring us to bhakti, devotion. We can only get bhakti from a person who has bhakti, from the bhakta. These things are helpful in the extent that they put us in contact with devotees. And therefore in the Vedic system, at any sacrifice, you know, the devotees should be there. The demigods are invited, and you know, there should be a qualified Brahmin priest who ideally is a devotee, so that the person, even if they're doing some karmapanda ritual for material gain, still somehow they're getting the association with devotees, they're getting that sadhu sangha, they're getting an opportunity. And they're also creating an opportunity, because at these functions, it's not just between the person who wants to achieve something, and you know, Brahmins or whatever. It's like everybody would come. In the Bhagavatam, the story of the sacrifice performed by Daksha. So it was like a huge event that people from all over the universe came to this sacrifice. And so there was so much opportunity for sadhu sangha created by these things. And that's the whole point of all these Vedic rituals, is to give everybody an opportunity to somehow or other get back. Because that's the goal of human life. So, the verse that we started with today was one of these typical Bhagavatam, what is the use kind of verses. There's several verses throughout the Bhagavatam that are that, you know, the theme of what is the use of this if it doesn't bring you to this? And it's always bringing you to bhakti. So it's like, what is the use of performing all these ritualistic charities and pious rituals if it doesn't help you control your mind? And the whole point of controlling the mind is to think of Krishna. So what's the use of all your rituals if you can't think of Krishna? If you can't fix your mind on Krishna? That reminded me of there's a verse in the first canto. Dharma Srinishita Bhumsam Vishvakshena Katasya Mukhavaya Yudhati Shrama Evahi Kevalam. So there's the, what is the use of all your dharma? You can perform your occupational duties perfectly according to your caste division, according to your varna, according to your ashram. But if Vishvakshena Katasya Mukhavaya Yudhati, if Those performance of those activities doesn't give you attachment, bhakti, to Vishvakshena, who's a name for the Lord. Then, shama eva nikeva. It's just so much useless labor. It's not getting you anywhere. So the way that we can think of all of these the kind of pious activities, charity, sacrifice, all these things, are good in that they're like preparing the ground. So it's like if you're a farmer and you're preparing your agricultural fields for that. If you're trying to prepare the field, and then you want to plant the crop, so you've got the seeds, you need to sow the seeds. But you can't just throw them on a field which is, you know, full of weeds and stones and garbage and, you know, it's infertile. You can try it, maybe something will grow, but you're not going to get a very healthy crop. What's that? I thought you were disputing the point. I thought you said like farming experience. No, gross. But if on the other hand we carefully prepare the soil, right? We plow it, we pick out all the big stones. My grandfather was a farmer, so I have experience that every spring, plowing the field, all of us grandkids had to get in there and pick up these huge stones and carry them to the side and picking up the stones, and then first they plow it with a big plow, then they go through, they kind of drag this thing that sort of scrapes the surface and smooths it all out after plowing, because the plowing makes big rocks and they have to level it, and then the fertilizer. So when all of that is in place, then the seed can be planted, and when the seed is planted under those circumstances, then it grows nicely, it sprouts quickly, it, you know, grows strong. So all of these preliminary activities are nice in that they prepare our hearts. They prepare our hearts and our minds to receive the seed of bhakti, to receive the bhakti bhakti beach. So we can see that in our society we have devotees from all different kinds of backgrounds, some from very pious backgrounds, some from not very pious backgrounds. And we can actually practically see the devotees, the difference. The devotees from very pious backgrounds, there's a tendency that, you know, when they do come in contact with devotees and take initiation from a spiritual master and get that seed of bhakti, then their spiritual life is very smooth. It's very easy, it's very natural, you know, to wake up early in the morning, to just sit down and chant in a very peaceful, meditative mood, to serve the devotees, you know, the kind of submissive, humble attitude of service. Because that's a result of their piety. Piety is like, compared to the crowns, that seed can just easily grow. But then others of us come from less pious backgrounds, and for us it's like, you know, the seed is there and it's trying to grow, but, you know, it hits a stone and then the root has to go, you know, around the stone, or, you know, it's kind of competing for resources because so many other weeds are there, it's like kind of getting choked out. So in our emotional lives it's like, it's a struggle, you know, just to get up, to get to Mangalarti, you know, it's difficult. And then to perform service, we have so much trouble with our minds are screaming at us, like, you know, what are you doing, you know, you should be making money, you should be, you know, getting a nice comfortable situation for yourself, you know, you're not even married yet, what's your problem, and you're going, where are you going in life, just, you know, serving, what is this? So our minds are always screaming at us, I mean, and that's an indication that we didn't have such pious background. It's all over the place. And then, you know, we come to the Association of Devotees, and then we fight with the devotees, you know, we can't get along, we have all these conflicts. And that's exactly what he's saying here, that the result of the uncontrolled mind is that we get involved in useless quarrels with others. So all of these pious activities are useful, and then they help us to control our minds so that we can easily fix it on Krishna. But the other point in this verse, text 46, is that, well, if your mind is already fixed, then you don't need to do all of these things. So if we're already in devotional service, we're already, you know, chanting 16 rounds a day, and following the four regular principles, doing devotional service, then we don't need to go back and start, you know, this prescribed duty, and I never called this vow, I never did this, but the other before becoming devoted, so, you know, maybe I need to do that to improve my spiritual life. Say it's not necessary. If your mind is already fixed and pacified, then there's no need for all these rituals and ceremonies. Just forget about it. You know, we've gone to the Prabhupada elevator, we got to the top floor somehow or other, although it might have been a struggle, but, you know, we landed here. Now, don't go back down. Stay there. Stay fixed at this topmost platform. And if your mind is uncontrolled, then what are the use of all these delusions? So there are all these verses, you know, like, what is the use of a lifetime of Brahma if you don't come to Krishna consciousness? Better a moment of full consciousness. And what is the use of ears that don't hear the messages of Bhagavatam? They're just like the ears of a snake. What is the use of the tongue if it doesn't chant the glories of the Lord, chant the holy names of the Lord? It's no better than the tongue of a frog, which just croaks to invite some death. And what is the use of having great wealth and great position, like a prince who wears a silk turban? It's just a heavy burden if he doesn't use his head to offer obeisances to the personality of Godhead. So what is the use of all this material advancement and material facility? What's the use of having the human form of life if we don't use our God-given intelligence to inquire, to understand the absolute truth? So there are all these what is the use kind of verses. And on the other hand, he says, Japa Sodharma Charanam Pujam Harer Vajan Apakko Tapatetado Yadi. He says that even if someone who has given up all these things, Tyakta, one who has forsaken all of his occupational duties and all these Vedic preliminaries, in order to Charanam Pujam Harer, who's dedicated himself at the lotus feet of Hari, Lord Krishna, then even if his bhajan apakva, like the word paka, he's ripe, mature, even if his bhajan, his worship, is not mature, and he falls down, patet, fallen, patita, it's fallen, patet, tato, yadi, even if he falls down at that immature stage, still, where is the loss? There's no loss. It's only gain. And then on the other hand, yadra, yadra, bhavabhadram, padur amushikin, tobardo, apto, padatam, sodharmaha. So the other half is, on the other hand, non-devotees, even if they perform their occupational duties perfectly, they don't gain anything. So we can see that the process of Krishna consciousness is so important and so powerful that really there's no value in anything else unless it comes to this. And even if you don't make it, even if you fall down due to immaturity and emotional service, it doesn't matter. Your life is still perfect because you tried. Because you did something. You know? Neha become an associate. But in this endeavor, there is no loss of diminution. And then Krishna gives so many reassurances to Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, that because Arjuna is worried, well, what if I fall down in an immature stage? So there it says that there is no loss. And he's like, yeah, no problem. You're just going to pick up where you left off. You take from a great family, a family of transcendentalists, where you have best opportunity to begin again. So don't worry, nothing to worry about. The process of devotional services really the best decision, the best investment in life. So then why waste time? And then the next point, so I wanted to speak a little bit about this point from text 48, that if we fail to conquer the mind, then we become bewildered and we create useless quarrel with others. So this is something that we have to be conscious of, is a tendency to create war with others. Because after all, we're living in Kali Yuga, it's the age of quarrel. And so the strong tendency to quarrel is there. And this tendency to quarrel is exacerbated by the fact that the uncontrolled mind tends to emphasize the distinctions between people, like these are my friends, these are my enemies, these people I don't care about. And continuing with the idea from text 49, that by identifying with the body, then our intelligence is blinded, and we think in terms of I and mine. Because of our illusion, then we think this is I, but that is someone else. He's not talking about impersonalism here, that, you know, we're all one, there's no difference between you and me. But he's talking about this tendency to emphasize the differences, to not see the common thread that's holding us all together as spirit souls, as eternal servants of Krishna. And especially in ISKCON, as followers of Srila Prabhupada, we all have our founder Acharya in common. Either he's our immediate spiritual master, or our Param Guru, or our Param Param Guru. But for generations to come, Srila Prabhupada is the center of ISKCON in all of our lives. And all of our service is going to Krishna through him. He's our strongest link to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we all have this common link. So that makes us all part of a common family. But in an international society, and here in Alachua, it's one of the glories of the Alachua community of devotees is that it is a very international society. So here we have devotees from, you know, so many different countries and cultures and backgrounds and, you know, socioeconomic classes. And so there's plenty of room to discriminate on the basis of all of these material considerations and designations. But we need to control our minds and not focus on those things. Because if we focus on those things, then it's going to end up, you know, leading to, you know, politics and factions and schisms, you know, that these are the Indian devotees, and these are the American devotees, or these are the South American crew, and, you know, these are the women, and these are the, you know, lower class people. These are the really sophisticated intellectuals, and dividing people into groups on all these material considerations. And when we do that, then we start to kind of, you know, we get into a, it's one of these things that just sort of like undergoes kind of stasis. You know, take a cancer that starts off small and it spreads throughout the whole body, spreads throughout the whole community, and becomes like a disease that debilitates our ability to cooperate to spread Krishna consciousness. You know, when we take people and just kind of label them, pigeonhole them, put them in a box along with all of our prejudices and generalizations, then we can't relate to them as spirit souls, as eternal servants of Krishna, which is what we really need to do. And that's why Srila Prabhupada said that your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate together to push on this movement. So we really have to control our minds to achieve this, because it's a big, big, big mission. It's a huge mission that Srila Prabhupada left us with. And we have a huge preaching field here in America. And the movement as it is now is actually a lot less than it was when Srila Prabhupada left. So we need to really, whatever we did wrong in the last, you know, whatever, how many years and decades, we need to set right. And I think a lot of that has to do with just controlling our minds and seeing each other as spirit souls and stressing what we have in common and cooperating and just getting out there and thinking that people are suffering for want of Krishna consciousness. There's so much suffering in the world, there's so much depression, there's so much, just, I mean, people are so much needing Krishna consciousness. And who is going to give it to them? It's us. It's only us. But alone, You know, just one here, one there, two here, three there. It's difficult. We need to come together. We need to really unite and strategize and push on the mission and unify when. I'm not so familiar with the Alachua community in this, I spent the last 4 or 5 months in Gainesville at the Krishna House, and it's been a very nice experience. It's very inspiring how the devotees there really cooperate together nicely. It's like a big family. So it's like every devotee in the temple is there in the morning program, chanting together, dancing together, hearing the class, discussing. And then they all go out on the campus. It's like practically everyone in the temple, you know, all the devotees, like after doing the whole morning program together, taking prasadam, then they all go to the campus together and, you know, serve prasadam and trying to, you know, interact with the students in different ways, through kirtan, distribution. And it's so nice. It's like, you know, a well-oiled machine. You know, it's like all the parts are in place and it's just like doing something. It's like things are moving. And then when they come home from the campus after 3 hours there, then they all come and take a shot together in the temple room and they read. Someone's reading while they eat. And it's just really nice. The evening program is there. Even though the evening program is optional, it's like almost everybody's there doing their Bhakti Shastri course, like kirtan. So it's like, it's nice to see a community which is really together, really unified, nice relationships, and achieving something. Fulfilling the Srila Prabhupada's desire. Srila Prabhupada gave a specific instruction for the devotees of Gainesville to distribute prasadam and to do kirtan. And they're doing it. So it's a really nice model, it's a really nice example, and I'm very happy to have that association. So we have to really get beyond all of these bodily considerations. Because it's a strong tendency. And in fact, you know, we can even use shastra to justify. Devotees have used shastra to justify this discrimination tendency. You know, like taking verses from the Bhagavatam, like, you know, about the Kiratas and Kulindas and, you know, Kukashas and Kunas and Andras. And, you know, you read the Prabhupada and the Prabhupada describes all these different classes of people and start thinking, you know, this person is in that class. I think I'm like whatever. Isn't that everything about this experience? Trying to like put people in these boxes and then, you know, straight out this Vaishya Kita Shudra. Oh, this one's a woman, less intelligent, more or less. This one's a Shudra, you know, they shouldn't be given any, you know, authority. And it's very offensive, actually. And it's just wrong. Because the whole point of those verses is not to categorize people. The whole point of those verses is to show that even though people may come from these backgrounds, practically speaking, but they can achieve the supreme destination. Everybody can, that's what it's, you know, when I first got the Bhagavad Gita, I was in Malaysia, and I didn't have an association with devotees. And I would just, you know, I would pick up the Bhagavad Gita, and I would pick it up, read a verse, read a verse for it. And then I would turn and open to another verse and then part four. So I was doing that for some days, and then one day I opened up to 9:32. And I was like, people of, you know, lower birth, women, Vaishya Shudra. I didn't know what a Vaishya Shudra was, but I was like, low birth, women? What is this? You know? I closed the book, put it down, and I didn't pick it up again. I was just like, that's it, you know, finishing this body by doing. But I didn't even get to the last part. The last part is that they can all achieve the supreme destination. So the whole point is not that women, the emphasis of the verse is not that women are low-born, shudras are low-born, vaishyas are low-born. The point is that it doesn't matter what your birth is. Everyone can achieve the supreme destination. It doesn't matter if you're a kirata or a pulinda or a cannibal or a malecha or a yagna or, you know, if you had a pious background or an impious background, how charitable you were before you became a devotee, or how many drugs you took. It doesn't matter. None of these things have any consideration whatsoever after you take the Krishna consciousness. Everybody comes to the spiritual platform, and these things just don't apply to devotees. And why is that? The Bhagavatam explains. Yanna madeya shravana kirtana yad ravana yad smarana vipachit shvalo visadya savanaya kalpate kutapanaste bhagavan yudashana. Says that anyone who chants the holy name of the Lord, who hears the glories of the Lord, or who praises the Lord, or even offers obeisances to the Lord, or even remembers him, even if he's born in the family of dog eaters, he immediately becomes qualified to perform all Vedic sacrifices. And then he says, what to speak of somebody who sees the Supreme Lord face to face? So, all of the devotees in this time have definitely chanted the holy names, have definitely heard the glories of the Lord. And every day we're seeing the Lord face to face. So even if a person's born in a family, it just doesn't matter. The whole point is that it is absolutely no consideration. So we shouldn't give importance to these things. But instead we should just work together. I want to continue with this point. There's a nice, in case you need further evidence of this point. In the third canto of the Bhagavatam, there's this verse. The verse that I just quoted is the third canto of the Bhagavatam, and then the next verse says, Aho Bata Swara Pacho To Kariyam. So this is nice. It's like Aho Bata. It's like Aho in Sanskrit. It's like, oh, you know, Aho. Aho Bata means, oh, how glorious. And who is he saying is so glorious? Swara Pacho. He's dog eaters. These dog eaters, oh how glorious are these dog eaters! And why? And he says, and furthermore, Togariyan, they're worshipable. Because, yaj jiva dre. Jiva means the tongue. Agre means the tip of the tongue. Because on the tip of their tongue is Nama Tugyan, your holy name. And, it says that the persons who chant the holy name of your lordship must have executed all kinds of austerities, fire sacrifices, achieved all good manners of the Aryans. In chanting the holy name of your lordship, they must have bathed at holy places and clothed and studied the Vedas and fulfilled everything required. So, all of these things are already done for the body. It's all done. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati tells a story about a wealthy landlord. So this landlord, he goes to a goldsmith with a big lump of gold, and he says, dear goldsmith, I would like you to make this into a pot for me, for my milk. So the goldsmith takes it, and he's looking at the big lump of gold, huge lump of gold, and he's thinking, wow, you know, I really need this gold for myself, but I can't take the whole thing and just go away, you know, I'm going to get in, you know, big trouble for that, because this landlord, after all, he's very powerful. So, but what I can do is I'll just use part of it and keep part of it for me. So then he goes to the marketplace, he gets a stone pot, and he melts down the gold, and he plates the stone pot all over it. He makes a gold-plated pot. So stone with gold plated. And it looks very beautiful, it's very shiny, nicely plated, and from the outside it looks like from the gold pot. So he takes it back to the landlord, and he says, sir, here you are, your gold pot. And then the landlord picks it up, he's examining it. He's like, what is this? He says, sir, it's a gold pot. He says, this is a stone pot. Because you can tell, you know, by the weight, like gold is a very light metal stone. This is a stone pot. And then the goldsmith says, no, sir, correction, this is a golden stone pot. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura uses this story to point out how ludicrous it is to say things like, this is a Brahmin Vaishnava, this is a Shudra Vaishnava, this is a Hindu Vaishnava, this is a Malecha Vaishnava, or Western Vaishnava, or even this is an American Vaishnava or a, you know, Russian Vaishnava. It's all just absurd. Because it's like either you have a gold pot or you have a stone pot. It's not one or the other. So either the person is a Vaishnava, either a devotee, or they're not a devotee. There's no other adjective. Devotee is a devotee. And when we start applying these little adjectives and things like that, then it's just a symptom of an uncontrolled mind and the wrong concept of life. And if you continue like this, then, like the verse says here, Duranta Pare Tamasi Granati, that you will continue to wander in endless darkness. That's exactly what he's saying. Because of the illusion of this is I, but that is someone else, seeing the distinctions and the bodily concept of life, we will wander in endless darkness. And the word here is Brahmanti. So that reminds me of another verse, you know, Brahmanda Brahmanti, Komin Vajrahmanti, that we've been wandering this Brahmanda, in this universe, for millions of lifetimes. We're just wandering. But by the mercy of Guru Krishna Prasad Devai, Bhagavad Gita, then we get this theme of devotional service. So that brings me back to the original point, that after all this wandering, we need to get the seed somehow or other, and water it, and control our minds, so that we can cooperate together and spread Krishna consciousness throughout America and the rest of the world according to our capacity. Yes, Radhika, I'd like to say something.
So it's like that. Piety, but the usefulness of piety is it attracts
the mercy of the devotee. You know, when a devotee sees somebody who is ready for Krishna consciousness, then we're willing to make the extra effort to actually lift that person up, because it's easy. And it's like, you see the person, and just like, the person is a devotee. You know, it's like Bhavani, she goes on campus every day, and she always tells me about the students that she meets. It's like, I was talking to this girl, and she was so nice, she was so interested. She was a devotee, she was just a devotee. The only, she just needs to chant Hare Krishna, you know, to make it all, like, close the deal, you know? It's like, everything is there, just the Bhavani didn't quite drop yet. So that kind of person, they've done a lot of pious activities. And so, we feel more obligated to that person, then we really have to work hard to make this something. Where others who, you know, are so far away, then we feel like, okay, well, let me look for someone who's an easier catch. You know what I mean? Because we have limited energy, we have limited time, and we really want to make devotees, so we have to try to go for so the low hanging fruit.
It came to mind, the woman Vajra and Sudra verse.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, it's woman Vajra and Sudra is the verse that is referring to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, in one sense, the whole Gita is not, you have nothing to do with
these people love everything.
So, in one sense, the whole Gita is that we have nothing to do with these categories. But if you include the Vajra and Sudra, it's practically everybody.
It's everybody anyway.
Yeah.
We're all in that category.
So, then my question, I guess, is the problem in understanding the verse that women psychologically tend to think everything's about them, or that men tend to think, or tend to think that to blame everything on the women, they continually forget the rest of the verse.
Well, that, I mean, I'm sure that applied to me when I read it. That I was thinking, I'm a woman, this is all about me. The other part of the question was, is the problem that men?
To think, you know, well, it says women, it must be their fault, they forget to read the rest of the verse.
They forget that I'm a sugar too?
No, that's, well, it's how you get replaced.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, most of the verse applies to the surgeons, and you know, there's no discussion about that. They sort of stop at the first part of the verse to get the rest.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't know if that's, I don't know if that's true here, but...
Well, I don't know what men think. Maybe someone in
their
body would like to speak on the topic.
I certainly don't.
Yes,
sir. So, in the beginning of your class, you wanted things like a cat. But first of all, I think it's likely given a big one. I think it's like a whole month of class that you crammed into today. So much information you offer, so thank you very much for that. Earlier in class, you mentioned about, you know, how the mind can trick you to think, or why mind performs activities, why you like other people, how you're working on earning money, or something like that, you mentioned. So, I kind of take that, you know, as like a personal instruction, right? Because we should, you know, one of our practices that we should always be studying every day, studying through the Prabhupada's books, and understand that helps with our chanting to keep us on this level, or keep us in this association. So, you know, for me, this is like extremely important that you mention that this is my mind, okay, because you always tend to think of, okay, you know, we can go here. So if our sadhana kind of get slackened, then all these thoughts get entertained. So thanks for bringing up that point.
Yeah, that's a very nice point, because the way to control the mind, Krishna says, is to practice and detachment. So our practice is our sadhana. The word sadhana means practice. Sadhana bhakti is devotional service and practice. So Krishna sadhana, you know, by, as you said, reading through the Prabhupada's books every day, by, you know, coming to the temple if possible, associate with devotees on a daily basis, then these things help us to control the mind.
And you also mentioned that our love for him would be shown by how much we cooperate with his friends. So I always thought about that with so much disagreement that we have, or so much, you know,
each other. How much of a challenge is that? Shouldn't Prabhupada say specifically how much we cooperate? He didn't say how much we agree to spread this movement together. Mm-hmm. So, how can we really put that instruction to work?
Yeah.
You know, like to cooperate with this, you know, tendency to really pour in Christ.
Yeah, we don't have to agree. We're individuals, but we're not impersonal. Everybody has their own perspective, everybody has their opinions, everybody has their identities, their value of different things. There are so many ways in which we are different as individuals. But, you know, it's kind of a cliche in this stuff, but we should see the unity in diversity. But we should appreciate the diversity. Because if everyone was like me, well, it would be a very boring movement. You know, because, you know, I have my limitations, and even though I think, you know, I often think that my way is the best way, but I also have to appreciate that my way is not the only way. And there are other ways that are also effective, and sometimes, and in some circumstances, more effective. So everybody has different talents. Everybody has something to bring to the table. It's just like when you have a feast, you know, just use everybody doing something. It's like everybody cooks what they think is a nice offering, and everybody brings something different. You know, you don't even have to organize it. You bring your box, you bring your stuff, you bring your stuff, you bring your stuff. You just tell everybody to bring something. And because everybody's an individual, everybody brings something different. And therefore you have a wonderful feast. So as devotees, we all have different talents, different skills, different, you know, conceptions and backgrounds, and we bring that to the society of devotees. And those different things that we bring actually make it enjoyable, actually make it attractive, because variety is the mother of enjoyment, the spice of life. So we should really be happy that there's variety. We should celebrate the variety and celebrate